Welcome to
That's High Praise,
a Nicolas Cage podcast.
I am your host, VH Zest.
And I am your other host, Captain Nostalgia, and it has been quite a minute.
It has. Life kind of caught up to, well, at least me.
The film festival has kept me busy, so while, you know.
Right, yeah.
So we're back now. We got some cool things planned, I guess, for the, but until those plans manifest, we're here to talk about the unbearable weight of massive talent, the most Nick Cage movie ever to be produced.
I still think
that's up for debate.
Totally. I think, I gotta say I'm excited. I was very excited to see this movie. I'm very curious about how the conversation's gonna go. This movie is very unique. Well, it's very unique in a lot of ways. But my experience with this movie is very unique in that, for once, the people around me, knowing my love for Nicolas Cage, were at least as excited about a new Nick Cage movie as I was. And that has been crazy and interesting and really encouraging, actually.
Yeah, it's really weird. When other people like approach you and they're like, they know you're a Nick Cage fan.
Yeah.
They don't get it like 90% of the time. And then
totally.
this movie comes on the radar and they're like, hey,
wait,
you seen this trailer yet? You heard about this movie? And I was like, I haven't seen the trailer, but I've heard about this movie.
Yeah. I feel like I like ska music and it is just the same experience where people are like, oh, you're really into this. Let me share this stuff with you. I don't get it at all. Whatever. And it's like somebody finally being excited about it. And it was weird. My experience was the same, where it was like, I haven't watched the trailer. I know what it's about. I'll be honest, I'm much more excited for Dracula. But nevertheless, I'm glad you're excited. You know, because that's cool. And people don't get it. Nicolas Cage. I don't know why people don't get it.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage is the only actor ever in existence to have a movie named after him. That was a joke. It's National Treasure.
Got it. Yeah. There it is. That's true.
He is a national treasure 100%.
He is. Absolutely. It's why he's going to be buried in a pyramid.
He's going to outlive us all.
Also true.
So before we share our initial thoughts, I am going to share a trivia fact for you.
Oh, early in the game.
Early in the game. I have quite a few trivia things, but
cool.
This kind of broke my heart reading this right before we started recording. Quote, a sequence involving Nicolas Cage reprising some of his most iconic roles, like 1997's Face Off, Con Air, Leaving Las Vegas, and Gone in 60 Seconds, and a long black and white fight sequence between him and his younger self in a surrealist German expression set invoking the cabinet of Dr. Caligari from 1920, was cut from the film because the studio thought it didn't fit in the third act. According to Cage, the deleted scene will be featured on home media.
Cool.
I was really bummed because I remember like press for this movie hearing that he was gonna like reprise some of these like really iconic roles, and we didn't see any of that. But
yeah.
But yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, but also like, would it have been cool for him to like reprise, you know, iconic former roles? It could have been, yeah, but that's not necessarily Nick Cage playing Nicolas Cage. That's Nicolas Cage being Mike Myers.
That's fair.
You know, and like, I know, I'm almost positive I would have enjoyed it, but I don't think that's the premise.
So that's another thing, too, is it doesn't fit with who Nicolas Cage is now.
Right.
Because you look at, then there's a scene where, early in the movie, where he gets to Spain, and one of the characters, you know, he goes, I bet you're still making movies like The Rock.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like this like point of like supposed to be like a jab at him. And you know, when you look at his like 90s career, like we've covered a few of the movies, whether it's been The Rock or It Could Happen to You or Con Air, Face Off, you know. But then you get into this era of his like direct-to-video, and he's doing things like Mom and Dad, Mandy, Pig, Spider-Verse, and there's it's so wide like variety.
Yeah, totally.
But whereas when you look at like his like career before that, like it's almost all action movies.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I feel like this movie is like, obviously this movie is somewhat meant to be ironic, you know, but this movie is almost like them trying to almost get Nicolas Cage to make a return to action blockbusters with the ironic spin of, one, he never necessarily left, and two, he has had an incredible success in adult-themed drama.
Yeah.
You know, the unfortunate aspect of some of those things is that, like, it's meant very limited theater time, which, you know, for better or for worse, because some of those movies probably didn't deserve it.
If it even gets theater time.
Right, yeah, at all. Yeah, because there were so many, you know, made for video movies in there as well. But yeah, this movie was cool in that sense. And it's cool because it was like a tongue-in-cheek reference at the fact that he used to be an action star, but it was also like, oh wait, Nicolas Cage can still be an action star.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, for me, I feel like as a fan of Nicolas Cage, I've enjoyed movies that he's made in the last 5 to 10 years than it, going into like things like Raising Arizona or I see my VHS copy of It Could Happen to You over there, and I'm just like, but like Leaving Las Vegas, Vampire's Kiss, like all of those are fine movies,
right?
But I feel like when you get into like the highlights and like the majesty of his career, I'm thinking about Spider-Verse, I'm thinking about Pig, I'm thinking about Willy's Wonderland, I'm thinking about you know, like truly compelling films, or films that are just like absolutely just brilliant.
Yeah.
For whatever genre they're in. Like Mandy's a great grief piece.
It, oh my gosh, it is. Yeah. I mean, even more than like Babadook is. And Babadook was a good one. Do you think that, you know, kind of along those lines, do you think that that is sort of a sign of the times in regards to his older films? Or do you think that, like, it has more to do with maybe him and his ability to produce, or his ability to maybe actually somewhat ironically be particular about the roles that he takes?
I think it's probably a bit of both.
Okay.
And
I think so too.
I think, you know, like, I'm not the world, like, I'm not a huge action guy.
Totally, me either.
My dad was and still is. Yeah. And like when we were growing up, like he like oversaturated me to the point of where it's like, I don't really care about that kind of stuff anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, totally. If I'm reviewing it for Victims, I have no problem, like, going in with an open mind. But it's never something where I'm going to be like, you know what? I think I want to sit down and watch Cliffhanger tonight.
Yeah.
It's just not something that's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just who I am as an individual. That's why, like, I don't necessarily mind, like, Gone in 60 Seconds, but it's never a move, or National Treasure. Those are movies that I don't necessarily mind.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that Cage has a richer variety and palette as an actor.
Yeah.
That those movies kind of just are super surface level, where you get into movies like, you know, something sweet like It Can Happen to You. I've brought that up. Whereas, like, that's such a weird, like, diamond in the rough for his career, or, like, Moonstruck.
Yeah.
These really compelling or Adaptation's another great example.
I was going to say, like, I think some of your points are really, really valid, and I think some of it's kind of interesting because, like, yeah, you're not wrong about the past 5-10 years of his career and a lot of the, you know, wild rides we've been on with stuff like Color Out of Space. But, you know, as much as he was kind of typified in the 90s as an action star, Bringing Out the Dead and Adaptation and Moonstruck were not that. Not that at all, you know? And I think something that I think of, I think I probably lean a little bit more toward the idea that, like, that was a sign of the times for the 90s and late 80s, because there was almost no actor who wasn't given a shot as an action hero. Sure. Because Die Hard, like, pushed action movies into the limelight. So it didn't matter who you were, you know, freaking Bad Boys or, you know, every other Tom Cruise movie or Van Damme or whomever, like, action was the stuff in the 90s. And so sometimes I think I lean a little bit more toward the fact that, like, Nicolas Cage, while he has matured as an actor, his capability back then was limited more so by the time than it may have been by his choices.
I absolutely agree with that. And it's also, too, like, being a Nick Cage fan and, like, being a host of a Nicolas Cage podcast also, too, has, like, really challenged me to, like, kind of see some of the stuff. Like, Rumblefish is a great example. Rumblefish was one of the probably best movies I saw last year of his career. And it was a black and white character piece that was very similar to The Outsiders.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's...
That was what is that, Bumblefish? Is that
Rumblefish, yeah.
Rumblefish, yeah.
Great cast. But then, like, you also get, like, something that's, like... you get those, like, a weird anomalies where it's, like, Deadfall is another great one where he plays, like, such a loose canon character.
Yeah.
But he's able to do that because, you know... we talked about this, too, with earlier this year, but, like, one of, like, the most, like, random things that, like... you find at an anomalies in his career, especially during this time, was the Davy Crockett video.
Yeah.
Like,
oh my goodness.
So random.
Yeah.
But it really kind of shows his capability as a performer and his versatility as an actor.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we can ramble about, you know, theories of Nicolas Cage and whatever. And this, of all episodes, is the episode to do it.
Absolutely.
You know, but the unbearable weight of massive talent. Initial thoughts. I know I need to give mine. It was an interesting experience, and I kind of want to get into it.
I talked about this a little bit during my YouTube spoiler-free, but I really enjoyed this movie.
Sure,
there are absolutely things about this movie that just doesn't work for me.
Me too.
And I think it's ironic because there's a moment in the scene where Nicolas Cage is pitching Javi on the idea of taking this character story and turning it into a Hollywood blockbuster where daughters get kidnapped. And that's kind of, it feels like very meta of, like, the actual movie you're watching.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point.
Yeah, and the third act for me is like the weakest point.
It is. Dude, it is the weakest point.
Because it totally just takes this shift.
It does.
So that's my thoughts.
Yeah. No, dude, spot on. I think, like, I almost wonder if the writing direction changed at some point during the movie. Because I felt like the first act, maybe even into the second, almost definitely into the second, was about Nicolas Cage, was kind of like a microscopic view of the career of Nicolas Cage. Specifically, not just Nicolas Cage as a person, but they had a little bit of that in there, like his love for old movies and things like that. But I think that, like, as the movie went along, it was almost like there were times when I felt like the movie needed more plot.
Yeah.
And then times when I felt like, especially in the third act, where it was just like, okay, this movie has become nothing but plot, and I'm starting to lose focus on Nicolas Cage as a character, as an actor.
Yeah, I have a love-hate relationship with the third act because I feel like it feels out of tone for the movie,
yeah,
but you need it for his character to grow. Because sure, when you see the opening of this, and we're not getting into spoilers yet, but, like, in the beginning of the movie, he is kind of this very narcissistic person.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about this as we kind of go on, because there's a lot of, like, mental health stuff that's involved with his character.
Sure.
But, like, you need that whole, like, third act for him to kind of, like, feel complete as a character, to feel like he actually has an arc throughout the whole movie. Mm-hmm. Because his whole arc is, like, almost essentially learning how to love not only himself, but also others, and to kind of, like, be a dad and be also a husband, because that was kind of left open.
Yeah, that was left very open. And you make a good point that I didn't necessarily think about of like, yeah, this is in a way about learning to love himself, because in the first act, like, he becomes very defeatist. You know, despite his like kind of like inner monologue.
Yeah.
If you will. And despite, you know, some of the people around him trying to be encouraging in their ways, yeah, he becomes interestingly defeatist. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. I think that you're right. I think that there are aspects of the third act that are very necessary when it comes to like character development. You know, I just felt like, somewhat ironically, the third act made the movie feel like just a different movie. It was a tonal shift. You yeah. said that. It was a tonal shift. And I don't always love tonal shifts. I think those are delicate things. And, you know, like, not every movie is Strangeland. You know, like, it's just not going to happen yeah. every time. Not every movie is The Village. You know, like, it's just, it's weird. And it's delicate.
It takes a true, like, master of cinema to do that.
Yeah.
And we talked about this before we started recording, but, like, when it comes to a filmmaker like David Lynch, he's a very polarizing filmmaker.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I
can't stand him.
I really love him.
There you go. Prime example.
And but I bring him up because he has this habit of being able to kind of be in like almost like I've been like going back through his movies mm-hmm. and it's very hard for me to be like, this one's a drama, but yet there's all like there's these elements of like horror and comedy and yeah. like he's able to kind of like maneuver around multiple different genres yeah. within a contained space.
He is definitely good at tone.
And really like Parasite's another great example of that.
Oh, weird.
Where it's a drama and then like the last like 40 minutes of that, it's kind of like this like psychological thriller. But it has like elements of like comedy in it and everything else like that.
Yeah.
But it does. It takes a true connoisseur of cinema to be able to make those tonal shifts.
Yeah.
And I think for this one, and I've talked to people online about this, but like for me, like that was kind of the biggest disappointment of this movie.
Yeah.
Is I loved it enough with the relationship between Pedro Pascal and Nicolas Cage. I didn't need the whole like underlining like Tiffany Haddish and Ike Barinholtz CIA thing.
Yeah.
Like to me, it just kind of seemed really forced.
It did. It did. Yeah. I think that you're right. I think that like, so what people like David Lynch are good at is not just tonal shifting. It's like, yeah, it's like genre blending, mm-hmm. you know, it's, I feel like Jordan Peele's good at this too.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, he's so good at that, you know, and like it's make the movie a satisfying comedy, a satisfying drama, and don't let one tone take away from the other. And I feel like this movie really needed to not have a shift. It needed to have incorporation. It started off with this crazy, but kind of funny, like kidnapping scene. That I don't feel like that's a spoiler because it's literally the first scene of the movie. You can't avoid it. But that doesn't find any resolution till way too late in the movie, and it doesn't get met tonally either until that time.
Yeah, that opening scene, they sprinkle in hints of it here and there,
yeah.
but it's never something that's like, this is a thing.
Right.
Like this is it something we're trying to develop, because right. as an audience member, you're coming to see a movie that's billed as, quote, the ultimate Nicolas Cage experience.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I feel like there's only a couple of scenes in the movie that really stake that claim well. And like, it almost wouldn't be there if it weren't for the, like, treasure room, like,
oh, Nick God, Cage yes.
prop room thing.
All right. Well,
you know.
Yeah. So before we talk about spoilers and we jump into it, I have a trivia fact for you.
Yep, let's go.
And then you want to play a game?
Oh, yeah. I'd love to play a game.
All right, so you want to do trivia or you want to do game first?
You know what? I actually have something I wanted to read.
Go for it.
And I should have read it earlier. But nevertheless, so really important thing for everybody listening right now, really important thing. I'm only going to read one section of this. Please know that two Saturdays ago on Reddit, Nicolas Cage did an AMA. It is wonderful. It is like there are people on Reddit who are like, I don't like Nicolas Cage, except now I do. Like, it is amazing. Very satisfying as a fan. Very good, just solid AMA. But I wanted to read something of it because I think that, like, well, it's about this movie and I think it's valid and very important and just, I mean, it's Cage. He's just great. Okay. This part of first part of this question. What has been your most challenging role to get into character each day to film? And Cage's response was, I would say that Nick Cage in Massive Talent was the most challenging role I had to get into character for because I had the added component of trying to protect a person named Nick Cage and also facilitating the director's absurd division of so-called Nick Cage, and it was a higher wire act every day. And I think that is amazing because he kind of recognized the fact that, like, this movie is a caricature of him. And so he had to do this. He said he calls it a high wire act, but he has to balance the role between being himself and also like portraying himself in a way that isn't necessarily inaccurate, but is blown out of proportion and memed, if you will.
Yeah. Also on that note, I will say two trivia facts about this.
Sure.
Is that I read originally. When they pitched this, they had the backup plans that if Nick Cage said no to this, they were going to go to Daniel Day-Lewis or Christian Bale to see if they would play Nick Cage.
Wow.
Yeah. Imagine that movie.
Well, okay. So, okay.
And specifically those two because they are most ironically two of the biggest method actors in Hollywood.
Yeah, so I could leave or take Daniel Day-Lewis, but like, I think Christian Bale would have been wonderful, and I don't always like compliment Christian Bale like that. I'm sorry, but the Batman movies really kind of did a number in on me for Christian Bale. But like American Psycho is as over the top as any 90s Nicolas Cage movie. And I think he would have, if he'd have maintained that energy, obviously with whatever script they wrote, and of course, you know, like a weird hairline and, you know, Nicolas Cage isms, I think he would have nailed it. I think it would have been hilarious.
I would have still liked for, like, obviously this podcast, so you guys don't know, if you've never seen it, is named after the SNL skit with Nicolas Cage and Andy Samberg. Dude, I would have loved to see Samberg do this.
Yes! Oh! Oh my god. Now I almost wish Cage would have turned it down. Man!
There's just a trail of actors that said no to playing Nick Cage, and then Andy Samberg lands it. It's his comeback story. So my second trivia is in this movie, then this is, we're going to throw the spoiler tag on here. In the in the opening of this, one of the trailer that he takes a meeting with director David Gordon Green, who has directed the last three Halloween movies. But I read online, actually, and I don't know in what context this was supposed to be, but originally they were trying to get a cameo from David Lynch to do that. So I think that was what that scene was initially supposed to be.
Right.
I could be wrong, but that's kind of my guess.
Sure. That would have been interesting. Doubt it. I wonder if, given that, they would have went a sort of different direction with the movie. But either way.
I don't know, because having jumped into Twin Peaks a lot recently, he's not necessarily a terrible actor. He's a lot better than David Cronenberg.
Hmm.
But I still think he would have been kind of weird and quirky. And David Gordon Green was kind of...
Wasn't in the movie long enough to matter.
Yeah, take it or leave it.
Honestly, yeah.
Let's play a game, though.
Yeah, play a game.
How many Nick Cage references can we name in this movie?
Oh, shoot. Defending Tess.
Well, this movie opens up on Con Air.
Right. Con Air, Defending Tess. National Treasure. Mandy.
Raising Arizona.
Where?
It's when they walk in the vault, he has a, there is both a picture of High and the, like the little mugshot thing that you have to hold up.
Oh, shoot. Yeah. I do remember that. The Rock.
The Rock.
Face Off.
Gone in 60 Seconds. Gone in 60 National Seconds. Treasure.
Yeah, I said National Treasure, didn't I? Vampire's Kiss.
Where's Vampire's Kiss?
It wasn't that like his character, his like other self character?
No.
Really?
No, which is ironic. So it's ironic too that like I think that's supposed to be like an even like more like inflated caricature of Cage, because like I think it's supposed or to Valley represent Girl. Like maybe, yeah. But his shirt that he wears actually says Wild at Heart, and it has the Wild at Heart logo on it.
Whoa, okay, so Wild at Heart.
If you or someone you know is listening to this podcast right now and you're struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, we encourage you guys to please reach out. This is the heartbeat of why we do what we do. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. And as of this recording, there are 132 suicides that take place each and every day on American soil. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That is one death roughly every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, you guys can go to victimsandvillains.net/hope. That resource is going to be right in the description wherever you guys are currently listening or streaming this. There you'll find resources that include the National Suicide Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-8255. You can also text HELP to 741-741. We also have a plethora of other resources, including churches, getting connected with counselors, LGBT resources like the Trevor Project, and also Veteran Hotline as well. Please, if you hear nothing else in the show, understand that you, yes, you listening to this right now, have value and worth. We get it. Suicide, depression, mental health, these are hard topics, and the stigma around them doesn't make it any easier. But please consider the resources right in the descriptions below, wherever you guys are listening, because once again, you have value and you have worth. So please stay with us.
I think Raising Arizona?
I said Raising Arizona.
Sorry, didn't mean to say Raising Arizona. I think Leaving Las Vegas?
I think you might be right.
I think that was in there too. I don't remember where the guns are from.
The Golden Guns?
Yeah.
That's Face Off.
That's Face Off also. Okay. Wow.
I think we're up to like 11.
That's like 11, I think, yeah. I can't think of any more. There are some. Okay, like, don't get me wrong.
Wicker Man.
Yeah, Bees.
Very last scene.
Yep, Bees.
Not the Bees.
Yeah, so I really wish, I'm so glad Mandy was in there. I really wish they'd have snuck more, like, to your point, like, more recent stuff in there. Like, if they had been a Pig reference or a Willy's reference, that would have been incredible.
So I'm almost curious if this, like, even takes place in our universe. If this is, like, an alternative reality where, like, Mandy was, like, way earlier than 2018.
Okay.
And, like, his career has, like, suffered. Because, like, it's weird because it's in a characterized version of him.
Yeah, caricaturized.
Yeah. It's also autobiographical because, like,
right.
Fink, early on when they go to the spa, he's like, look, like, you have debt.
Like, yeah, that's right.
You know, you have existential amount of debt.
That's right. And that was the whole thing. Like, if you know anything about Nicolas Cage, I guess this is trivia, but, like, a lot of the reason he did so many direct-to-videos and stuff in the 90s and stuff is because, like, he just wanted to crush debt that he had.
Yeah.
Not 90s, 2010s. But, yeah, like, that's true. That's a good point. I did not think of it as autobiographical. I kept waiting for them to reference, like, black metal and stuff because that's, like, a common, like, trivia thing is that his son was in a black metal band.
That's also weird. Like, I'd never seen a side-by-side picture of them until the premiere for this movie. And his son is like a younger haunting like version of him.
Whoa.
With like just really long hair.
That's sick.
So like you definitely tell that they're father and son.
Yeah, that's so cool. There were some things I really wish there had been more like cameos of like his real life. I really went into the movie not knowing what to expect as far as like, okay, this is a movie about Nicolas Cage, but like Neil Patrick Harris is in it. Now, is Neil or is he not? And I was almost disappointed with the fact that there weren't more characters that had a similar treatment as Nick in the movie of like, oh yeah, this person plays a caricaturized version of themselves, you know, or for whatever reason.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really weird because like it, and Javi's cousin Lucas like even says that he's like, you know, he calls him Nicolas Cage. This scene where they're eating the cereal, he says Nicolas Cage, the famous star of Hollywood. Yeah. Meaning like he's the only one. This movie like feels like so incredibly meta that it's just like,
yeah,
he's the only one.
Yeah.
And like, yes, you have appearances from like David Gordon Green and also Demi Moore, but it seems those are like just like two random like sequences because like David Gordon Green directed Nick Cage in 2013's Joe.
Okay.
But outside of that, like they've never worked together, and like David Gordon Green hasn't done a comedy since 2011. At least I believe so.
Yeah, yeah.
And so like having him and Demi Moore just kind of seemed like really weird choices.
Yeah. Yeah, there was some of that. Like, I love Neil Patrick Harris. Why Neil Patrick Harris? Why Pedro Pascal? Like, I thought it was wonderful. I think their dynamic is hilarious. Although, I think to some extent it got a little overplayed as they went on. Like, I'm not... Okay, so we talked about this, like... action movies or whatever. I, in recent years, have begun to feel about comedies the way I feel about action movies as well. Mm. Because, I don't know, I just feel like they're often overdone and they get off on the same tropes over and over again. And I'm not the biggest fan of it. And I felt like this movie was definitely funny. Don't get me wrong. But there were a couple times, especially with Pascal, where, you know, it would be like a serious moment and the music would indicate that it's serious. And then it would like just break into a joke. And it was like funny the first time or two. And then it was just like, well, now I know exactly what to expect. It's not funny anymore. It's not driving anything forward anymore.
Yeah.
It just is. It's Marvel humor. You know, it's just like, huh, let's do the same thing because they liked that 11 times. You know, and it's not tasteful.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I think for me, this movie works really well because of the Pedro Pascal Nicolas Cage relationship.
Yeah, it does.
Like when you're talking about like what genre to classify this in, I've seen multiple sources call this a bromantic comedy. And I love that because so like, good. It's so accurate though. Like their relationship is just fantastic.
Yeah.
Their timing with one another, like I kind of all just want to see the movie they end up making
in the
course of this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, right. I want his, like, next movie to be, like, a... Like,
That movie. Imagine. Yeah, I think that's amazing. I'd like to point out, too, though, like, this movie is very interesting when it comes to genre because, yeah, I mean, you can just slap the label of comedy on it and you'd be correct. But, you know, looking at it more introspectively, like, this movie is pretty much a mockumentary and it's the second one that Nick Cage has even done. Because Adaptation was a mockumentary.
Yeah, but he didn't play...
He didn't play himself.
Played Charlie Kaufman.
He played Charlie Kaufman. But nevertheless, like, I think it's very interesting that, like, I can only think of two mockumentaries that are films, and they're both Nick Cage movies, and I think that's super cool and niche and weird. And, you know, I'm kind of wondering... I can only think of one other movie that's like this in the sense that, like, by the end of the movie, you realize it's a movie about a movie.
I'm curious what it is now.
Reed Fish.
Oh.
That was a terrible movie, but it's a movie about a movie.
It is true. I mean, you could also say the same about The Truman Show.
Oh, I guess that's true. That's a movie about a TV show. Yeah, I guess that's true, but you know it going into it.
Yeah, I will say, like, one of the things that, like, even... So this is my third time seeing this. And, nice. like, One of the things that I really admire about this is the way that like certain shots, and I guess this is the cinephile me, are the like
cinematography
is great.
It's great,
especially when it's like a fictionalized like version, like they're trying to like mock like the glossiness of Hollywood.
Yeah,
I think they do that really well.
They do, yeah.
But like my favorite parts about this movie, outside of like Pedro and like Cage, is the like the transitions that they make.
Yeah, dude.
Like
the party transitions
and
stuff.
The party transitions were so good. Gorgeous. And then you also had the transition at the end where it's like we're going from like real life to like this like in universe movie.
Yeah.
They did those really well.
They did. They totally did. Yeah. Yeah. If we're just shooting back and forth, great and not so great things about the movie, that is one of the highlights for sure. I thought dialogue was really great. I thought they did a good job at like making a movie that's kind of a meme of Nicolas Cage, but they didn't directly reference memes. You know, he didn't like make any of the stupid faces that you see memed or anything like that. The closest thing they did was that like sequin pillow. You know, that was the only like real world reference, like meme kind of reference I feel like they made. And I think that's super cool because he's a very memed person. And I'm sure they were aware of that going into the movie, but they didn't just try to capitalize on a bunch of internet humor.
Yeah. So fun fact for you about that pillow.
Yeah.
The very last day of production, Nicolas Cage bought every cast and crew member one of those pillows and autographed it.
That's so
them.
Good.
So
that's so good. Oh, man. That's amazing.
Yeah. So this is a movie that, like, I feel like it's almost like an overload almost of Nick Cage.
Yeah.
So it's like I don't honestly, like, know where to start. Like, we've given our general thoughts on it. We've talked a little bit about the issues that we've had with the movie. But, like, I am going to say something that might be a little bit risque for you.
Oh.
But I think that I could see this definitely being, I won't say this is going to end up being like high on my list for one of Cage's best roles or like one of our favorite episodes that we've done this year. But this, to me, I think I can see growing to be like a comfort movie, like Step Brothers or Mean Girls, Talladega Nights.
Okay. For yourself or like...
For myself, yes.
Okay, interesting. I would love for this movie to do a couple of things, just in general for the public. Sure. For one, it's like the first movie in a while that has gotten major theaters, you know, theater time for Nicolas Cage.
Yes.
It's the first movie in a while, and people have been talking about it months and months and months before it's come out. Major for Nick Cage in that regard, and I'd love to see that excitement maintained. You know,
this is the I mean, you're gonna have to because of Renfield next year.
That's true. Yeah.
But I think also too, like, this is the first film since Mandy where you've had this much acclaim.
That's true. Yeah.
Come out of it, like people like Mom and Dad, like people who have seen it, like, oh, this is a ballsy, weird, incredible movie.
Yeah.
And then like even like Prisoners of Ghostland last year, like there have been a lot of people that have seen it, but most people that have seen it have Shudder.
Right.
So like while there's
they
like a
moviegoers.
Yeah, a really weird movie, like even Pig last year didn't really get a whole wide release.
That's true.
So like
some theaters. Yeah.
It's now streaming on Hulu. We highly recommend you check it out.
Oh my gosh, stop what you're doing.
I mean, push pause and then go watch it.
Nick considers that his best movie too, and we agree. Something else too, like I think you're right about Renfield and things like that. I could see this movie potentially keeping Nicolas Cage in people's, you know, somebody people want to see. I could see this movie making people want to go back and see what he's been up to. That's my biggest hope, if I'm being honest. And then, you know, another thing is I could see this movie, maybe even kind of stylizing or popularizing a genre.
I know this is totally out of left field, but this movie made me really want to watch Paddington 2. I saw the first one.
I didn't see the first one.
But the second one is like apparently like one of like the best movies to be made within the last century.
Yeah, didn't it get like it got 100% of Rotten Tomatoes? Like it's like contested against Citizen Kane.
Yeah,
yeah, I remember that. That was like a big thing.
Happened a couple years ago. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, or a couple years. Yeah,
yeah, but man, yeah. So I just honestly don't really know where to go with this conversation.
Yeah, this movie is a really hard movie to talk about. It's fun. It's so fun. Please go see it. Please tell people about it. We enjoyed it. But the movie doesn't, it's a comedy, and in the vein of comedies, in my personal opinion, it does lack substance.
Comedies are probably one of the hardest genres to talk about.
Yeah.
And they're one of the, and as a film critic, it's also one of the hardest genres to judge.
Yeah, like maintain objectivity.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Especially, and I think in almost every role that I've done, that's why I'm kind of like almost exclusively to our horror department, and it's because what makes me laugh might not necessarily make you laugh,
right?
And
right,
vice versa.
Yeah,
and I think being in the audience tonight, like you heard that, like there were like people behind us that were just like laughing at everything, and then like I was like, that really wasn't funny, and yeah, you know, kind of stuff like that. So it's like it's really hard. But I think with this film brings up a lot of really good mental health themes.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, how to deal with failure. One of my favorite sequences is the sequence where Neil Patrick Harris is pitching him the idea to do Javi's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically says, you know, the running joke throughout the entire movie is, you know, we need to kind of reinvent ourselves. Not that, you know, not that we went anywhere. And
yeah, yeah. We're back. Not that we went anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of one of the things that he says in that particular scene when that joke is first introduced is, you know, you don't shit on yourself.
Yeah.
And yeah. Like, every time I see that, like, I'm just like, that always strikes me so profoundly.
Yeah.
Because I think it's so easy to talk, like, negatively about yourself.
Yeah.
And to kind of see yourself identifying with failures or yeah, faults or losses or, you know, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
But it's a true challenge to have to see yourself in a positive light and yeah, maintain that.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, I think that's so good. That's so good to talk about because, and this could even be somewhat of a meta thing to say, but like Nicolas Cage, by a lot of people, according to a lot of people, isn't a good actor. He's had a lot of weird roles, a lot of roles that are quote unquote the same. He does a lot of like over the top, almost caricaturistic expressions and movements and voices and things like that. And, you know, A, B, C, you know, whatever. All of that stuff, you know, that's meme that people talk about, that people like roll their eyes out, people, you know, scoff at and things like that. But nevertheless, you know, Nicolas Cage never, whether he knew about that stuff or not, and he does to some extent because like people ask him about it on the internet, and he's kind of just like, it is what it is. It's attention. It's publicity. And I'm glad I still get to do what I get to do.
Yeah.
And taking roles that maybe people didn't see so that he could pay his bills. I mean, he just had a daughter, you know, not too long ago and stuff like that.
They just announced they're pregnant.
Pregnant. So got it. So sorry.
About this time next year.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Yeah, so, yeah, like, imagine, for everyone out there who is a Nicolas Cage fan, this does not apply to the people who do not, so because you're probably not going to, you know, understand it. But if you're not a Nicolas Cage fan, thank you for listening. really. But, you know, imagine if Nicolas Cage had taken all of those stereotypes, those caricatures, those memes, those, you know, that attitude to heart and stopped.
Yeah, there's also another thing too about like the power of the internet that we've seen recently is like Sonic's a great example where a couple years ago where they Paramount unleashed the original trailer, and all of fandom pretty much bullied an entire studio into redesigning the character.
Yeah, which in a way is, like, mean, and in another way is, like,
it's kind of
good on studios for listening to fans.
Yeah.
Because certain WB do not.
But I specifically bring that as an example is because, like, I mean, had he, to your point, like, had he taken that stuff to heart, like, and kind of, like, you know, dove into that and, like, allowed that to affect him, like, I mean, we could be here talking about a lot less Nicolas Cage movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, he could have, you know, killed himself or, you know, drank himself to death or, you know, any number of things could have happened.
Yeah, I don't know anybody who doesn't like Into the Spider-Verse and it wouldn't be the same.
No.
And that's a very recent Nick Cage movie.
Yeah.
Kick-Ass. Quite recent Nick Cage movie, you know? Yeah. I mean, you know, last 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah, but and like I think that you have so many of those movies that are beloved, but you know, I think that this movie has, you know, not just a Nicolas Cage thing, but like, you know, there are some times where like, and I don't know if you can relate to this or not, man, but like there are definitely times where like I find myself like kind of like stuck in that state of mind where it's like I have to remind myself that like, you know, to paraphrase, I didn't go anywhere. Like I'm like still like right here. Like my day to day like might not necessarily be what I always want it to be.
Yeah.
But it doesn't change the fact that like I'm still alive.
Yeah.
Still breathing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I have a car, I have a job, I have a wife, I have a home, you know.
Yeah.
Like my circumstances might not be like Hollywood level, but they're
totally,
you know, they're great.
And I think the movie points out too. In not a highlight of the movie, that sometimes like even when your circumstances are Hollywood level, that's irrelevant.
Yeah,
you know, because then like you're so much more, you know, confronted with the opinions and decisions of others. You know, because a lot of those people have, you know, they have dietitians, they have managers, they have agents, they have, you know, and this is an individual human being having an agent or a manager.
Yeah.
You know, like not a manager of a department, a person. You know, like it's just such a dynamic that the normal people aren't used to. And everybody's like, yeah, but I mean, those people are rich and famous. So like it's easy for them. And it's like that all of that aside, it's different for them. Okay. That's such a weird and strange and foreign dynamic for the rest of us. You know, and but nevertheless, none of that stuff, as glamorous as it may seem or may actually be, no matter how many dollars it puts in your pocket, no matter how many, you know, straight to video movies pay off your bills, it doesn't change the fact that, like, you're a person, you have a psyche, you're prone to, you know, struggling with your mental health, struggling with your image, struggling with your passion, which yeah. I think a lot of this movie, one of my favorite things about this movie is that it really, without using the word, really speaks to the notion of being passionate. Yeah. Because and Nicolas Cage very much is, and if you listen to any of his interviews or things like that, he really does love like German expressionist acting. He really does love classic era movies. He really does, I'm sure, considers himself a thespian. And I think this movie is so much about just being willing and able and risking, you know, your life, your finances, your reputation on your passions. And that's so freaking valuable.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack with what you just said, but like all of that is like so valuable.
Yeah.
One of the things that like specifically like, you know, I think we live in this generation that people are like, if I become Instagram, if I become TikTok famous, if I become, you know, YouTube famous or go viral, whatever platform I want to be on, then I'll have happiness.
No, then you'll have to maintain your status.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, maybe that's fine and that's not a bad life, but yeah, I mean, sometimes like getting to do what you want to do isn't easy.
Yeah. One of the things that like I was specifically wanted to mention is like Plea for Purging has a line that says fame is a lonely word.
Sure.
And anytime that like we get into like I get into conversations about this, like I can't help bring that quote up because, you know, I think we look at, like, you know, not even just recently, but you look at, like, talent like Janis Joplin or like, you know, Chris Cornell or just Chris Farley, a lot of, like, famous iconic people that, you know, OD'd or committed suicide.
Yeah.
And, you know, the world is a colder place because they're not here.
Yeah.
And whether that was fame or whether it was, you know, other circumstances, sure, a lot of what we perceive it as, because we as the general population,
yeah,
only see a little bit of it. Like, we only get to see the story the way that the media portrays it.
Right.
But a lot of that is, like, really heavy.
It is really heavy. And it's interesting. It's very interesting to look back at folks like that, you know, who didn't last, you know, especially for suicide, especially, like, in the music world. It's very interesting because, like, if you go and, like, read about all of what Sid Vicious as a musician did or didn't get to do, he was very young. His career was very short. And it's wild to me that people know who the Sex Pistols are to the extent that they do.
Yeah.
It honestly, in a weird way, was only really, not only, I don't want to, like, trivialize this, but, like, the fact that he died, the fact that he committed suicide or was killed, like, whichever you subscribe to, like, that boosted his fame, you know? Same with, I think, probably, same with Kurt Cobain, you know? Like, these people are people. You know, especially these two guys, like, these are DIY, you know, barely touring, trying to survive artists who are immortal for a very unfortunate reason.
Yeah.
And I think we tend to think of them in the limelight. We tend to think of them like, oh man, he was big and famous. Why did he do it? Or why did she do it to him? Or, you know, X, Y, or Z. Look, these were kids, man. They probably were nowhere near as famous as you think they are then, and they probably never realized that they were famous in the first place. Like, people are people, you know? Like, yeah.
And also, like, at the end of it, like, I also, you talked about, like, you know, staying true to yourself, but also at the same time, like, your you know, your passion, holding true to that. And that's one of the things that I think as much as this, the Nicky character kind of has, you know, is kind of like that devil on the shoulder for Nick, mm-hmm, Nicolas Cage, as in this movie, you know, I think he does do a good job at kind of, you know, reminding him, you know, it's probably one of my favorite scenes is, like, the introduction of him is, like, you know, what if we don't get this, you know, what he is, you know, we move on and we go to the next one. It's like what we've always done. And yeah, that just speaks volumes to that, you know, Nicolas Cage isn't necessarily in, it's one of the things that I really respect about him as an actor is that he's not necessarily looking for, you know, Marvel movies or, you know, these blockbuster movies the way that he was 20 years ago.
Right.
He's content being where he is because he loves the fact that he's loving what he does. And
yeah,
again, that's one of the things that, like, has been a hard pill to swallow. Like, when we started Victims and Villains, you know, 5 years ago, I had every intent of wanting to be in a place where, like, I could do this full time and I might not necessarily be at that level.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
like, I'm at a position where I'm like, man, like, I like hanging out with you, Micah. And
yeah. Yeah.
I love, like, watching Nicolas Cage movies and yeah, I love preparing and doing film festivals. And,
right,
you know, so it's like, I've found satisfaction and joy,
yeah,
in other places.
Dude, I'm so glad you brought that up. Like, I was talking to my buddy Mikey from Windwards the other day, you know, and like, you know, we were talking about being in a band, playing music, touring, things like that, things that, like, we have done, love to do, and want to continue to do, you know, play music and tour. And, you know, we were talking about the fact that, like, especially where we are now and I don't think this has anything to do with age, but it took age for me to realize this. Like, that has nothing to do, or almost nothing to do, with the idea of making a living.
Yeah.
With the idea of being signed and not having to have a day job or anything like that. I love my day job. It does not offend me to have a day job, to be able to pay my bills, to do any of that. Now, that does not, if my day job gets in the way of my potential to tour, that may be something to wrestle with at a time. But like, the point of getting to tour, getting to play music, is because I love it and I'm just gonna do it.
Yeah.
Or I'm just gonna try real hard to do it. And the fact of the matter is that is the value of it in itself, is that it's my passion. And you know, I try not to get validation out of it or things like that. It's very, I think that's kind of a slippery slope.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, like, that's what matters. What matters is, like, I love it, I can do it, and hopefully it blesses other people, at least by example.
Yeah, and I think, too, that speaks volumes also, like, creativity and mental health.
Yeah.
Is, and I think that's kind of what, you know, we kind of see in the film how Nick reacts to rejection. Like, he gets really drunk and, you know, he kind of embarrasses his daughter and kind of makes a mockery of her 16th birthday. And I think, you know, when you're dealing with rejection on that level, where almost it feels like the entire world is watching you, it is, like, rejection in itself is hard enough, but imagine, like, having it on a publicity level that heavy.
Yeah.
And having to just kind of have this attitude of being like, all right, we'll get the next one.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's so...
How would you guys like to help us get mental health resources into schools, conventions, and other events? Well, now you can. Simply go to patreon.com/victimsandvillains for as little as $1 a month. You guys can help us get mental health resources into current and upcoming generations, educate, and break down stigma surrounding mental health, suicide, and depression. And you get exclusive content that you can't get anywhere else. And you guys can tell us which Nicolas Cage movie you want us to cover, and we'll do it. All it takes to get started is to go to patreon.com/victimsandvillains or simply click the link in the episode description wherever you guys are currently listening or streaming this episode. Pick your tier and get started today. Yes, it's that simple. So quickly select the tier that you want and help us get hope into the hands of the depressed and the suicidal today.
A lot of things. Brave.
And, yeah. And when you're a content creator, that's really hard to do.
Yeah.
Like, there are some weeks where we'll get numbers and in from, like, downloads or whatever, and I'm, like, really discouraged. And I'm just like,
yeah.
F.
Oh, I know how it feels.
Yeah. So, yeah. Like, you know, sometimes, like, it surprises you because you're just like, oh, okay. But, you know, to kind of have that outlook in life, like, you know, and just letting the content go and being like, all right, I don't know who needs to hear this. It's out there in the world. I'm just going to be vulnerable and share, you know, XYZ stories about my own mental health struggles. Hope that they relate to someone.
Right.
Through this medium that just happened to stumble upon this episode.
Yeah. 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 I don't even know that I have a response for that. That's so good. And yeah, like, shoot, I know so many people who are like that, who are just like, yeah, I would just love to do this for a living. And it's like, you want to be at the mercy of other people's opinions for a living. You realize that that's more or less what you're asking.
Yeah.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. You know, but like, being a YouTube content creator, being a podcaster, things like that, like, people are like, yeah, I mean, how cool of a job is that? All I have to do is, like, make and edit videos. And it's like, no, that's not all you have to do. You have to spend every waking moment doing that. You know, like, there's so much more that goes into it. And at the end of the day, you can bleed all your blood, sweat, and tears out for it. And you know, not make it anywhere.
See, Nicolas Cage does it right. Like, he makes the content he's still, like, happy about.
Yeah.
But, like, doesn't have any social media, rarely takes press interviews.
Totally.
I'm like, if I'm going to do that, like, that's probably the life that I'm going to live.
Yeah, totally, totally. I love that, like, there are so many people, especially in music, who are, like, I mean, they're 50s, 60s, maybe even their 70s. And, you know, we think of them as, like, oh man, they're famous musicians. They don't have a care in the world. Blah 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 blah. Dude, chances are they kind of lucked into it at when they were way younger than us.
Yeah,
it's the only life they've ever known, and at this point, it's a day job.
Yeah,
you might not think of it as a day job, or you might think of it as a freaking rad one, but like at the end of the day, they are almost landlocked into it because it's all they've ever known.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's very true.
Yeah.
So,
anyway.
Would you like some trivia?
I would always like some trivia.
All right, so Tiffany Haddish in this movie.
Yep.
Plays Vivian, who is one of the CIA agents, told Nicolas Cage on the set of this movie that she lost her virginity to Face Off. In the theater.
Oh, my God. Oh, okay. I was like, oh, all right. That takes me back. But interesting.
So we talk about, we talked about how the world of this, feels very isolated because there's a lack of celebrityism and it kind of makes Nick Cage not feel like a genuine celebrity. The original script was to include cameos from Naomi Watts, Quentin Tarantino, Charlie Sheen, and Jim Carrey. But because of COVID, the cameos had to be dialed back to just Demi Moore and David Gordon Green.
That's lame. Dude, I would give anything. Freaking Jim Carrey and Nick Cage, I would give anything. Of course, now it doesn't matter because Jim Carrey's retiring.
Could be retiring.
Coward.
Are you bullying Jim Carrey on our podcast?
I love you, Jim Carrey.
Nicolas
Cage is great, but you're my favorite actor.
This is movie number 100 with Nicolas Cage in a leading role.
100?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool. That's. I wonder how intentional that was.
Lionsgate paid out HBO Max and Paramount for the movie rights. So basically what that means is that when this comes to streaming, it'll be streaming to HBO Max. This is kind of a cool fact. According to Neil Patrick Harris, Nicolas Cage had body makeup to cover his tattoos. When asked why Nick Cage, the character, doesn't have tattoos of Nicolas Cage, the real person, Cage said the character didn't have as many wives as him.
Ooh.
He's on his
fifth? I think it's fourth. I thought it was fourth or third.
I think he's.
I know. I'm pretty sure he's been through three divorces. I only can ever remember Lisa Marie.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that was his first.
First or second? Yeah.
One yeah. Two. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The Nick Cage character of this movie does not belong to the Coppola family.
Interesting. They do name drop Coppola at one point. I can't remember when. I will also, I don't know if you've noticed this, but like they keep spelling Nick with a K. That's not necessarily the common spelling of Nick Cage.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Which I think it's a great nod. Yeah.
It's a like really subtle differentiator. You might not even notice. I wonder if it's caused the Mandela effect for anybody. Write to us and tell us if you always thought it was a K.
Oh, this is an interesting one. Being both men of religion, both Nicolas Cage and Tiffany Haddish nearly joined Scientology.
Oh. Nick Cage. Interesting.
For the first time since Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Nicolas Cage is piled with his first name, his real name, Nicolas Kim Coppola.
Piled. Oh, like credited?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because Fast Times was, I believe, the role before, it may have been the role before Bumblefish, but it was definitely before Valley Girl, which was his debut as Cage.
Yeah, Fast Times was 81.
I was a little bit bummed that there were no comic book nods in this movie, because that's a big thing for Cage as a person. And I was really bummed that there was nothing. Well, I guess they like mentioned Marvel one time, but I mean, they mentioned Star Wars too, whatever.
Yeah. This is the third movie where Nicolas Cage plays dual characters.
Third.
Face Off and Adaptation.
Oh.
Here's a meta deep cut. You ready for this?
Yeah, yeah.
So there, Nicolas Cage in this one sings the song Happy Together, where the song is featured. This is the second time that this movie is featured. Do you have any idea what the first movie was? The
second time the song is featured?
Yes.
I was wondering if there were any songs that were references to former Cage movies, but I don't know what movie it was.
The only other meta movie he's done, Adaptation.
Whoa! Yo, I love the awareness with which this movie was made. I was wondering if there was going to be any, like... Yeah, if there was going to be an awareness about it, and I'm glad that like there does seem to be.
So he actually turned down this movie 3 or 4 times before accepting it, according to a interview from the Hollywood Reporter.
Why?
He just didn't want to play like this version of himself.
Knowing him and like his kind of love for character development and stuff, I could kind of understand that. Because he really does love character-driven movies and roles.
Yeah.
Is that all for the
That's all trivia? For the trivia, so... Man.
Cool. I guess... mean, I feel like this movie contains trivia. Like, you might learn about Nicolas Cage's career if you didn't know certain things.
Yeah, there's actually... I think it's funny that when they're going through the museum, you talk about the fact that this movie has its own trivia.
Yeah.
I love how they, like, as they're, like, going through, like, the wall, he's like, oh, he's like, is this the chainsaw from Mandy? But literally right on the table, the first shot is the axe from Mandy.
I know. I thought that was very interesting. I didn't know if that was intentional or not, or if maybe he was wrong. Like, it was actually a chainsaw from a different movie, but they, like, wrote the script that way for kicks. I don't know what a movie it would be. It was literally my first thought was like, I wonder if that's intentionally wrong because the axe is right there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. So I think we've come to the point where we've all been dying to come to. Is the unbearable weight of massive talent worthy of high praise?
Okay, the name of this movie. I'm not even sure if the movie lives up to it, but that is a gem of a name for any movie. And the fact that it's a Nicolas Cage movie about Nicolas Cage, that's probably my favorite thing. It's so good. Yeah, it's worthy of high praise.
Okay.
You've seen it 3 times. Tell me.
I was like, man, he's really stuck on this title. What do you think about the movie?
No, I think the movie is worthy of high praise. I really do. I think it's great. I've been very unimpressed with a lot of comedies in the past several years, and I haven't seen as many, and it's probably to some extent a me thing, and I'm biased because I love Nicolas Cage, but it's a fun comedy. It's a very interesting sort of like genre approach, you know, given that most people's experiences with mockumentary starts and ends with The Office. You know, I think it's... I think it's a good caricaturization. I think it's really fun... just highlight of someone's career. It's a very interesting thing to do. It definitely has some depth to it. I don't think it has a ton personally, but definitely earlier on you get some depth, and then in the third act you get some depth as well, just with like you see the character's priority like shift and things like that through trouble. And I think that we've all been there. So I do like the movie, definitely.
Before I give mine, I just want to say that if screensavers were still a thing, Pedro Pascal on LSD would be my screensaver.
Oh my gosh, his smile. Pedro Pascal's smile is incredible. Oh my gosh.
So good. But yeah, I agree. This movie is absolutely worthy of high praise. I think this is, like I said, this is going to be a comfort movie for me coming up. I love the camaraderie between Pascal and Cage.
Yeah.
And for all of for all the issues I have with this film, I think that, like you said, with comedies, like, that's a me thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But also at the same time, I feel like this is a great entry-level movie that if you've never seen a Nicolas Cage movie
or... It'll make you want to.
You haven't seen Nicolas Cage in a long time, I think this is the perfect entry point.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely agree with that. It references Nick Cage movies that I haven't seen, and it's made me want to see them. I really hope, especially if nothing else, people really go check out Mandy. I think Mandy is just an, like, star-studded, absolutely positively incredible film. And if you don't like it, I'm sorry, but it's great. It's great, and I think it has the real potential to give people hope for Nicolas Cage and the career that he has had over the past 10 years that you may not have paid much attention to.
Yeah, and his next two movies are Westerns, so.
The Dracula movies a Western?
No, his next two that are coming out later this year both Westerns.
Cool, yeah, very excited. I hope they're spaghetti Western. He is Italian, and people forget that.
He is Italian.
Yeah. I had to convince an Italian friend the other day of that.
His wine's not that great, though.
That's wrong. You're wrong. I think it's, but I don't like wine that much. But not,
yeah.
It's fine.
It's too dry for me. I'm not a dry guy. I'm a sweet guy.
Fair enough.
So
they have so many different kinds of wine. I don't know. Whatever.
That's fair. But yeah. So, anyways, we're gonna be back next month talking about what movie we do next month.
Oh man, what are we doing next month? We're doing Defending Tara to Tess, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think this movie
Guarding Tess.
Yeah, I think this movie. it really kind of references that movie maybe a lot. I've never seen it. I'm really excited. I think it's a really natural progression from this one into that one. So
I didn't know this was a movie until like a few months ago. I randomly came across it at a thrift store and I was like,
yeah,
this does not look like my cup of tea, and then walked away. So I'm interested to see what this movie is going to be about. But
yeah.
I think you're right. Like, the main core of Javi's love of Cage kind of pulls from that movie,
yeah,
which is such a deep cut.
It is a real deep cut. Yeah.
Because it was released, I believe, the same year as It Could Happen to You.
Wow. So it's been a while. It Could Happen to You is, what, 94?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But cool. Yes, that's going to do it for us. Where can people find you online, sir?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at VHZest or at Mullet Stash. Stash is in like mustache. You can find me on Spotify at just my name, Micah Kimber. I do spoken word on there. Nothing about Nicolas Cage, but there is a little one about Superman, so that's close enough.
That's a great pun there. You guys can catch me. I am on Letterboxd at Captain Nostalgia, and I am starting to slowly trickle back into making TikTok. So it's that gent Ghostface.
Cool.
And you guys can check out our parent company, Victims and Villains. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube. Wherever you guys get your podcasts from, and most importantly, if you go to victimsandvillains.net, you guys can find more podcasts like this. Links to all of those social medias, our Patreon, and most importantly, our mental health resource library. So until next time, we're going to hit the gym because this is a true load of unbearable weight. All Woo. This massive podcast.
Real quick too, we're getting into
are you going to say con season?
Con season. Yeah, we're getting into con season. We have at least one con that we're almost definitely on this coming summer in North Carolina. We're going to hopefully try to jump on some more. Sometimes we get those and we can only do podcasts like panels. Sometimes we get those and we actually get the opportunity to have a table. And so either way, if we're in your area, come talk to us about Nicolas Cage and mental health and we'll probably be selling comic books, so it'll be fun.
Yeah.